Welcome to the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible. With your own personal guide, the pilgrim on the 405, Mr. Will Crist.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks with the Pilgrim on the 405 in this beautiful day here in Laguna Beach. Been discovering that there's a lot of people who are very concerned about computers, internet technology, networks, and how they're protected. And because of that, I've been talking to a number of different groups. We're going to have the general manager of Hirsch Identiv on in a couple of weeks to talk about how they're working with securing networks and securing spaces and the kind of future that they see. And today we have a very distinguished guest. We have the CEO of Talon Executive Services. And Ron Williams was in the Secret Service for 23 years. He spent 16 of those years in investigations. And in 4 years of investigation, he worked in credit card fraud, computer fraud, and cyber fraud. And so he is uniquely qualified to talk about these issues. And we're really privileged to have him on Pilgrim Talks today. So welcome, Ron.
Well, thanks for having me, Will.
Good. So tell us a little bit about these 23 years of investigations with the Secret Service. Tell us about what did you have to do with credit card fraud and computer fraud, things like that?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Credit card fraud really got its impetus in the early 80s. Everybody thinks that, credit cards have been around forever and ATM machines have been around forever, but not really. About 1983, starting in 83, there was a tremendous upshot or growth in credit card fraud, basically because the credit card companies dumped a lot of credit cards on consumers out there without real, security embedded into the cards. They were just, the early cards just had your name and number, and they were tracked, by the card companies with name and number. The banks were the issuing banks. And so organized crime rapidly got into the counterfeiting of credit cards and drove the losses right through the roof, and issuing banks were taking huge, huge chunks of loss. And it was all organized. And so the banks, realizing that they were taking a bath with organized fraud, went to the FBI and asked them to engage in investigation of credit card fraud. And the FBI basically turned them down because they were involved in drugs and drug suppression, and they came to the Secret Service. Now, at that time, there was no federal crime on the books for credit card fraud. And the banks offered to bankroll the Secret Service to investigate these organized criminal groups. So we, with the help of the banks bankrolling our investigations, we drove the fraud down to what we want to call acceptable levels. The banks basically have a defined level amount of fraud that they are willing to accept, because they pass those along to the consumer. But when it goes over that point, they take that's what they call the acceptable fraud loss. When it goes over that amount, they get extremely uncomfortable because they're losing billions of dollars. It goes over the acceptable fraud limit. We cut into that and drove it down below the acceptable fraud limit. And with the success in 1983, 84, they went to Congress and they passed the law, Title 18, Section 1029, which is the statute, federal statute, that the Secret Service operates under. And basically what that law states is anytime you use a numerical number to defraud, the Secret Service has jurisdiction. That means credit card fraud, but it also parlayed over into computer fraud. And so anytime that an ATM machine, for instance, is defrauded, that becomes a Secret Service investigation. Now, the FBI is also involved in cybercrime investigations, and mainly their interest is in terrorism. although the terrorists have engaged in financial fraud to an appalling degree. But together, the Secret Service and FBI work jointly together on cybercrime issues. I'm a member of the Electronic Crimes Task Force out of Los Angeles that is sponsored and run by the Secret Service, but incorporated into that Electronic Crimes Task Force is the FBI, Customs, California Highway Patrol, the LA Sheriff's Department, LAPD, and quite a few range of law enforcement agencies, and they're all housed right into the Secret Service office, so that there is tremendous communication between the agencies as it regards cybercrime.
So now you mentioned that terrorists are using credit card fraud, you said, to an appalling degree. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, terrorist organizations have picked up on how to manipulate identity theft and to steal money that they use in supporting their terrorist operations. And that's where, you know, the FBI comes in to track, monies that are being stolen or taken via credit card fraud loss or over the computer or over the internet. I can't tell you with certainty what that percentage is, but I know that retail fraud loss in the United States, that is theft out of stores, etc., they attribute about 25% of that fraud loss to terrorist organizations because they're engaged in criminal activity to support terrorism.
So
that's a little known fact. That's a little known public. That's not a publicly known fact because, you know, not too many people want to talk about that. But the reality is that, these terrorist organizations have studied the way the Nigerians utilized identity theft to steal millions and millions of consumer fraud dollars. And they're also engaged in it.
So there's a patriotic reason to protect our own identities and our networks.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely.
Well, that's a very interesting thought, that we have a patriotic mandate to protect ourselves, not just for what it does for us, but what it does for the country.
Well, I ran the Nigerian Task Force. It's now called the West African Task Force, because they actually perfected identity theft in the late 80s or early 90s, to which other organizations parallel are copy. The Russian Mafia, the Japanese Yakuza, the Chinese Triad organizations, the Islamic Radical Fundamentalist. All sort of pattern, identity theft after the Nigerians that came in and successfully compromised identities through various methodologies and ways that they've been successful. And, of course, today, over the Internet, it affords hackers and people who want to engage in malicious application to steal identities ad nauseum through all kinds of deceptive methods like phishing and farming. Phishing being, if you go on your computer and a message pops up that it's your bank, like Bank of America, doing a fraud alert, and the next question when you respond to it, the next question is provide your name, your date of birth, all the other requisite information to verify your identity. It's if it doesn't have the lock on it that shows that it's secure data, then it's probably a phishing attack trying to capture your information. So there's various ways that hackers are stealing identities.
So that would
there's
be
a program.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, there's a program called Zeus. If you want to Google that and take a look at Zeus, capital Z-E-U-S, that in early 2006 into 2007, they would, hackers would send a message to, an email message to various people and companies and corporations, small businesses. And once you open that, you may not recognize the sender, and you may instantly delete it, but once you opened it, they're inside your computer. And what they're doing is, inside that computer, is looking for proprietary information, bank account information, because what they would do is, from small businesses, then arrange a wire transfer from your bank account to a foreign bank, and where they would make the withdrawal. And the government investigated that case, and fraud loss was up to about $70 million. And they arrested over 10 people from, I don't know how many people they did arrest, but there was in multiple countries, like Moldavia and Germany and the United States. They used inside bank employees on that. So, you know, there's various methodologies that are being perfected all the time to steal identities or proprietary data and information. And then you have the corporate executive who's working for a company, and he may be approached by another company to come and work for them at a higher salary. But somebody in that other company may say, look, can you bring the client list? Can you bring the pricing? Can you bring, you know, some of the contract negotiation, et cetera, et cetera? And what he's asked, what they're asking him to do is provide them with trade secret information from the company he's leaving. And that happens quite frequently. And that's one of the things that we get called in on numerous occasions to investigate, is the theft of trade secret information.
Okay. So now what we've been talking about up until just this moment was consumer identity theft, right?
Right.
And so now you're also going to tell me that there is considerable theft and fraud at the company level.
Well, yeah, there's insider theft. There is a law that was passed in November of 2003 called the California Breach Law, that is known as SB 1386. The California Breach Law stipulates that companies and corporations have a fiduciary responsibility to protect all identity information that's in their computers as it relates to name, date of birth, Social Security number, California driver's license info, any identifiers. Mainly it's name, date of birth, and Social Security number that would identify a person, because with a name, date of birth, and Social Security number, I can capture your identity and use your identity to defraud. So SB 1386 was passed, and now I believe 49 other states have the a breach law. We do not have, at this time, we do not have a federal breach law, but at least 49 states have a breach law to protect identities. That being said, the California breach law is very important for companies to understand that they have a fiduciary responsibility to protect all of that information that identifies people in the system. Now, when you talk in terms of corporate espionage or trade secret information, there was a law that was passed in 1996 called the Economic Espionage Act of 1996 that says that, you know, it's unlawful for you to steal or take, let's say take, information that is designated as trade secret information from one company. It's against the law. It's against the Espionage Act of 1996 to do that. And the first case that was tried on that, of the Economic Espionage Act of 1996, was General Motors versus Volkswagen. And in that case, a General Motors executive at a very high level departed General Motors and went to work for Volkswagen. But what he took with him was the blueprints on how to build factories at a very cheap rate and to streamline the making of cars so that it was economically a lot more feasible. So he took the factory plans over to Volkswagen and gave it to them. And, of course, their first plant mirrored what General Motors was going to do, so they brought suit. And in that case, if I remember correctly, and I may be wrong on the amount, but if I recall, it was $20 billion that lawsuit was settled for, plus the individual was prosecuted under the Economic Espionage Act of 1996.
High stakes.
Yeah. Well, they've had various cases that came under that also that have come up. But the message here is that companies and corporations have really a fiduciary responsibility to not only protect identities that are in their system, but the trade secrets that reside on their information systems. And the way you do that is, first of all, you define what a trade secret is. In other words, what is a diamond? What is the crown jewels of your business? And you identify them as trade secrets, because if you don't, and somebody leaves and they take valuable information, it may not be designated as a trade secret because you haven't designated it to your employees that it's trade secret info. And so any lawsuit or criminal prosecution is going to be negligible because you didn't take the requisite steps to protect that information and those trade secrets.
Whoa.
So the first step is to identify the identities in your system, the things that could really hurt you if they were taken, like trade secret information, the crown jewels of your business. You identify those in your system, and then you cell group them and make it very difficult for anybody to take them without an alert, an audit. So you monitor your trade secret information, that if anybody goes into that system and tries to extract it, it alerts. That's number one. Number two, you encrypt a lot of your data, or you send it to a cloud or a data center to be protected. And then you monitor your system 24/7, because what happens is these various software security companies come out with the latest software to protect your system. And what happens is the hackers find holes in that software. And so you purchase all of this software to layer your security. And within 6 months, it's antiquated because they found a way around it. Firewalls are important, but they're speed bumps. So you have to tier and layer your security and always, always engage your employees in an understanding that they have a fiduciary responsibility to protect the information and sign protocols and procedures on how to protect that, because if you don't and it's stolen, you may not have cause to bring civil charges against the person who stole it or criminal charges.
So you said something about cell protected. What does that mean?
Well, you cell group the information, you divide it out, and make it only accessible to a select few that need to know. Not every employee in your business or company should have access to payroll information or trade secret information or R&D research. Only a select few should be able to access that. And when they do, there should be a monitoring system that provides an audit or log to show you when that information was accessed and who accessed it. And, of course, I frequently give pointers to CEOs about when they're running their business, and this is invariably always interesting, to tell them that they should be monitoring their employee transmissions at all times to see if they're either sending out information or putting valuable data or information on a USB stick or a flash drive. That will create an alert that, you know, information is in the process of being stolen or shifted or transmitted. And, of course, the response I get back by many corporate executives, CFO level, CEO level, is we want to create an environment of trust with our employees so we don't monitor their electronic transmissions. That's a big, big, big mistake, because I always come right back, but with the old adage that you've heard President Reagan use, trust but verify.
What you're talking about now would be akin to theft, to just outright theft, right?
Right.
What about...
But, you know, I'll give you a for instance. We did a... The company will remain unnamed because we sign NDA and confidentiality agreements, so we never tell anybody who our clients are. But in one company, we were tasked with... this company was going to undergo an audit by the state of California, and they had to pass the audit. So we were hired to do an IT risk assessment, and we did a penetration test into the system, which we were able to get in within 30 seconds into their system, and we found a malicious application on the system, and the malicious application was a Trojan where somebody could actually press a key and basically sabotage all the information on the system. And it was put there by the CIO, person who ran the system, because he was in collusion with a couple of other corporate executives to, you know, send information to a competitor and get a kickback. So some of those are some that's that kind of gives you some idea of what we get involved in investigations, but it also tells you the depth of damage that people who are engaged in theft of information can have on a company. They can destroy a company overnight.
Wow. And this is all people who are in the company itself.
Right. Exactly.
Wow.
Our data from the Electronic Crimes Task Force show that 75% of the time, about 65% of the time that there is data theft, it is perpetrated by somebody in the company. Of that, say 65%, let's say 100% of your employees who engaged in data theft, 75% of the time, it's somebody in the IT department itself.
Wow.
That's because they sit in a catbird seat, and they sit in an overview. They sit in a very powerful position.
So what should companies do to protect themselves from this? So you talked a little bit about separating your data, encrypting your data, about reporting, but if it comes out of the IT department, what can a company do to protect itself?
Well, there are several things that need to be done right away with a company. That is, they need to establish protocols and procedures. They need to have a full program, InfoSec program initiated, where everybody signs an agreement to, you know, protect the data. You have to identify what the trade secret information is in the system. You have to protect that trade secret information. We frequently make the recommendation that you have third-party review, that is a company like ours, to come in and do internal IT audits and external audits to make sure that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And if there's a breach, one of the things that we advocate, if there is a breach that's detected and we get called in, or the company decides to investigate it, always, always, always we recommend that you have a third party come in to do the investigation. The reason is because frequently CEOs or CFOs will try and save money by having somebody in their internal IT department do the investigation. The problem with that is, number one, frequently the people that are working in the IT department are not familiar with chain of custody and how to preserve evidence. So the first thing they do is they ruin the chain of custody and valuable data and evidence because they're not used to how things are done from a law enforcement perspective. The second thing that you get is potential collusion with somebody in the IT department who actually engaged in the theft. And the third issue becomes, if that case goes to trial, both civil and criminal, a very astute defense attorney can allege that the company internally slanted or ruined the investigation to make their defendant look guilty. And it works. So I always advise a company, if they've had a breach of information, to hire a third-party review of a third-party company like Talon, who's used to coming in using law enforcement methodologies to do the investigation and preserve valuable chain of custody evidence. Because once we get the chain of custody, once we establish through forensics that this information has been stolen and who did it, then we bring in our interview teams and interview the culprits, and we have about a 96% confession ratio with when we do it that way.
Wow. Well, listen, can you stick around a little bit after the break here, and let's talk a little bit about how Talon goes to market.
Okay. Sounds
all right.
Good.
We'll be right back. First, let's hear a word from our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Bob Barber with Sandler Training. I'm here to talk to you about rule number 6. Don't buy back tomorrow what you sold today. I was talking to a salesperson the other day, and he'd closed a big deal. Gone to the bank, cashed the check, the works. Unfortunately, he got a 4 o'clock in the morning phone call from a prospect saying, put a hold on things, something's come up. He'd had second thoughts. Second thoughts. Have you ever had second thoughts? Of course you have. It's human nature. It's usually right after you let your daughter stay out late on Friday night, or you order dessert or buy that new car. Did I make the right decision? It's only human nature. Traditional salespeople tend to rush through that process, hope that the person doesn't have their human nature natural reaction of second thoughts or buyer's remorse. They try to close the deal, pass that problem on to somebody else, get that contract processed. At Sandler, we help the prospect embrace that. Bring it up, help them go through it, work through that second thought, that buyer's remorse. It might sound something like, Jim, I'm looking forward to working with you. I think it's going to be fun. This accounting solution is what your company needs. Now, you were a little concerned that we couldn't get the conversion in place within 3 weeks. It's going to be more like 5. Are you going to be okay with that? Help that person work through it. What better way to reinforce the role of a trusted advisor than to help that person work through their buyer's remorse? Rule number 6, don't buy back tomorrow what you sold today.
Well, welcome back to Pilgrim Talks. We've been having a wonderful conversation with Ron Williams, the CEO of Talon Executive Services, talking about cyber crimes, and he's got a long history of working at the federal government level and now at the local level with companies and individuals alike, companies who are concerned about maintaining their intellectual property, their crown jewels that make the company valuable, and also identity theft and protecting local customers from identity theft, sometimes from groups that funnel the money back to terrorists. So, Ron, that's all wonderful information, but you've got a clientele out there. How do you, at Talon, how do you go to market? How do you find prospects? What's the process of bringing them in to help? Because I presume that lots of companies need your help.
Yeah, mainly we rely on labor law attorneys as well as intellectual property attorneys, IP attorneys, insurance companies, insurance brokerage companies that are going to be writing cyber insurance policies. That is who we mainly market to. We do some direct marketing. I do a lot of speaking on the topic. We're going to be speaking at the Association of Corporate Growth, ACG, I think in April. We do a lot of speaking on this to different law firms because our program on Protect the Crown Jewels of Your Business is certified by the California Bar Association for MCLE credit. That way, when we go to a law firm, we give a lunch presentation for 1 hour, and the attorneys get one MCLE credit. So there's ulterior motives to have us in so that they can get a credit. But it gives us a chance to highlight our expertise, to talk about the issues, and get our name known. And so we do a lot of that. And that's how we market. We also have direct marketing through the Smart Business Magazine. We put an ad in that magazine on a monthly basis to highlight our expertise. And that magazine goes to CFOs, CEOs around the country. And so that's another way that we market our services.
So,
and a lot of our services are frankly word of mouth.
Uh-huh.
People are looking for somebody. Who do you know that does computer forensics? Talon. Who do you know that does IT risk vulnerability assessments? Talon. So,
what is computer forensics? How would a company know they need computer forensics?
Computer forensics is, for lack of a better term, an electronic investigation, meaning that if you have somebody that you think has embezzled thousands of dollars out of your company, you would hire a forensic accountant to come in and do a forensic audit or an accounting to track the money. It's the same process. If you do a computer forensic investigation where you think that data and information, valuable information or data, has been stolen or taken. And I'll give you, for instance, we got hired, again, the companies will remain anonymous, but we got hired because one employee at a very high level left the company, and it was in the mortgage banking field, and one of the competitors, they started losing their client base to the competitor that this executive went to work for. They became suspicious, so they asked us to come in and do a computer forensics on his computer to determine whether or not he had taken client-based information, pricing, etc., client list, which were deemed trade secret information. We did the computer forensics of his computer, which is merely mirroring the hard drive and looking at all the areas where data is stored, metadata. And doing a computer forensic investigation is sort of like doing a murder investigation where somebody tries to clean it up with bleach, clean up the blood. They can clean up most, but it still leaves blood splatters. And in the instance of somebody that steals data or transfers data to their home computer or to another computer, it leaves a trail, an audit trail, that you can tell, even though they've deleted it, we can bring up the deleted information. And it shows where the information was taken, where it was transmitted, when it was transmitted, and what information was transmitted. Now, if you use a professional deletion software program, you may not ascertain all of the data that was taken, but you can still put together the fact that it was transferred, data was transferred, and the fact that somebody used a software program to clean up the deletion is in itself used as evidence against the individual. Mm-hmm. Shows that they've taken the requisite step of deleting the material.
Well, now, is Talon a national company? Do you have accounts all around the country, or are you just California? What's your market?
We focus our business on California, but we can do work around the country. We've actually done computer forensic work in New Jersey, all over. Usually it starts in Southern California, but, you know, a company that may be a national company, where we start in California, we go to the different states to do the investigation, but it actually initiates in California. And we've done some international work.
So most of your business comes from referral, from word of mouth, right?
Mainly word of mouth, mainly attorneys, mainly insurance brokerage firms, some CPA firms.
All right. Do you do any sort of inbound marketing on the internet, any search engine optimization, anything like that to draw people who are looking for your services to your website?
You know, Will, that's an interesting topic because I've actually, talked to our webmaster to do that. The candid, I'll be very candid with you. We've been so busy that that sort of has hit on the back burner because we stay extremely busy these days, and I haven't had an opportunity. I think there's real merit in marketing over the internet. Uh-huh. And internet optimization. I firmely believe in it. It's just something that I haven't got around to do. Uh-huh. Be candid with you, because I don't have time.
Let me ask a question in a different way then. If you did have more prospects, qualified prospects, who were looking for your services, would you be able to service them?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
We expand and contract as we need to. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. We've done a good job in maintaining our quality, with the people that we have out there.
Uh-huh. All right. So
and
the...
most of that comes through project management, and we've got, you know, extremely good project managers.
Excellent. Okay. So if you did have more leads, more prospects, qualified prospects, you'd be able to service them. And one way of doing that is through the internet. You just haven't had the opportunity to execute that yet.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
That's plain and simple.
Oh, good. Okay. Now, do you have salespeople? You don't have salespeople to go out and market your services, do you?
No. You know, it's interesting. We have, in the past, hired marketing directors, but they're relatively ineffective, and the reason is because what we do is very unique. We're not marketing widgets to sell.
Uh-huh.
We're marketing, you know, professional services that are very specific, and you really have to know the market, and you have to know, you have to build these relationships, and that's what it's all about.
Somebody really has to want your services. Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I mean, they have to want them, need them. This is not something that you're going to go out and convince. Well, I'm thinking about that. When would you like to be in a client's executive suite? After something happens or before it happens?
Well, before, There's two parts to our services, and that is proactive and reactive. And we used to, years ago, do a lot of proactive work in compliance work, Sarbanes-Oxley, Gram-Leach-Bliley, you know, the HIPAA rules, called for proactive measures to be established, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But in economic downturn, companies don't put money into proactive measures. And so we have found that it's much more lucrative to be a reactive fireman coming in and putting out the fire and then doing the patchwork and then coming back and doing a risk vulnerability assessment to identify the vulnerabilities and then make recommendations on how to protect the data. Because, you know, companies and corporations are just not going to put money into proactive measures. They have to be hit between the eyes with data loss and take a huge hit before most companies, you know, do a security risk vulnerability assessment, because they don't see the merit in it until they get hit. And then when our phone rings, it's not how much do you charge, it's when can you take care of this, and by the way, we need it done now.
This is the classic example of the flat tire budget, isn't it?
Right. Exactly.
Most people.
But I've learned, I learned a long time ago, you know, that you can make presentations and beat people over the head about proactive, being proactive. You know, it's kind of like telling somebody, look, we need to put up parameters at your house. We need to put alarm systems at your house so that you don't get burglarized, and do a crime demographic study and find out who your neighbors are. Do a full field risk analysis of your home, because that, you know, if you're talking to somebody about their home, they don't want a burglar to come in and steal. So it's logical that we would put an alarm system in. We do this, we do that. Okay, I understand that. All right, so take that analogy and talk about somebody coming into your company and stealing your crown jewels of your business, your trade secret information, your identities. Are an employee doing the same thing? Let's say, you know, that he's approached by another company that says, look, we're getting ready to make a proposal on this contract, and we know that your company is making a proposal. How about if we pay you X number of dollars to give us, you know, your proposal? Mm-hmm. Tell us how much you're bidding. Prevention is kind of like, what is that brake company that says pay me now or pay me later?
Right. Yeah.
You know, take care of it now or pay me later.
Well, I wonder how many people are out there right now. What would be your target company? What would they look like size-wise? I mean, you said that you prefer that they would be headquartered in California. What size-wise, what would be a target company for you?
Well, you know, we don't have basically a size company that we target. We've done work for small businesses, but we've done work for Fortune 500 companies too. So, but you know, usually the Fortune 500 companies, they are well protected because they have a lot of internal staff. They hire people to protect the data internally, to watch over it. You know, a company like let's say Broadcom would have a lot of people engaged in IT security, and so, you know, they're probably not our target market, but there are a number of companies, pharmaceutical companies, chemical companies, you know, these type of companies, healthcare companies, that we would say are probably our target market.
All right. Do you think that there are companies out there right now who are looking for you?
Yes.
And they just don't know that
every day.
And they don't know you exist right now?
Right.
Ah, okay. All right. Interesting.
That's right.
That's interesting.
That's exactly right.
Ah, yeah. Well, it sounds like there's some interesting possibilities there. But this is wonderful. Now, as we finish up here, what would you like to leave with? What message would you like to send to people who are listening to this show? Could be CEOs, could be individual consumers.
Well, the reality of the information age is that corporate America exists now in the information age to protect the crown jewels of their business. The crown jewels of a corporate's business today resides on information systems. And you have to be proactive and take the requisite steps to protect that data and information. And it means not being naive. It means monitoring employee electronic transmissions. It means encrypting choice cell sites and information. It means, maybe getting some of your data to a very secure data center or in the cloud. And the reality is that data theft is up 660% in the last 5 years. So it's not going away. It's only going to get worse. And, besides having to contend with China and some of the other countries stealing our data, our technology and information, that's a whole separate issue when you talk in terms of corporate espionage. But we have a fiduciary responsibility to protect the information and data. 85% of critical infrastructure in the country resides in the private sector. And that's something that most people don't know. And so whose job is it to protect this information? It's everybody's. And so everybody that works in a company, a corporation, needs to be educated and understand the nuances of data theft and take appropriate action steps to protect it.
So, Ron, how could somebody get in touch with you if they wanted to talk more about this or maybe wanted to have you come and speak to them?
They can call me at 1-800-808-2566 or go to our website at www.talloncompanies.com, or they can email me direct at rwilliams@talonexec.com.
Excellent. Ron, thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule to be with us today. This is very vital information and very interesting, and I think there's probably a lot more business out there than you can imagine that's looking for you right this very second.
I would agree with you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ron, for being with us.
As I always said, Will, as long as companies hire people, I'll have a business.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Super. Well, we've spent the last hour with Ron Williams, CEO of Talent Executive Services, who is an expert in helping companies protect their most valuable assets, their intellectual property, protecting it from crime outside and crime inside. Ron's an expert. If you have any concern at all about the vulnerability of your company, give Ron a call. You'll be glad you did. Well, that's it for this Wednesday's edition of Pilgrim Talks with the Pilgrim on the 405. Glad you were with us. Look forward to talking with you next week when we will have the general manager of Hirsch Identiv to talk about what's in store for that company as they move forward into this wonderful new marketplace. Glad you were with us. Look forward to being with you next week.
You've been listening to the one show that takes you where others won't, out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible, with your own personal guide, Will Crist, The Pilgrim on the 405.